Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Again, I'm Dan. Thank you for being with us again today. Paul will be leading us through much of our work today, but I wanted to begin just to kind of recap what we touched on yesterday and kind of give one segue and then hand it over to Paul. So yesterday we considered the Anthropocene and the planetary emergency endemic to the Anthropocene, and said that it's helpful, well, one, that we really need to understand this era and the emergency in relationship to the history, the ongoing history of Western extractive colonialism and neocolonialism. And then I suggested that the Anthropos, right, at the center of this era, theologically can best be understood in relation to the figure of Cain, the one who had the tools of the gardener, who had the plowshare and the pruning hook to begin his narrative and turn them into the weapons of domination, into the sword and spear, and went off after he killed his brother, fled God, fled the soil, and built a city, a political ecology of domination. So the rest of the week, we're going to be looking at how do we live faithfully, how do we live responsibly before God, before neighbor, before the earth in this era. Right? Begin to think about some of that. And today what we would suggest is that a moment internal to this response, a moment internal to the work of taking the swords and spears of the world and beating them into plowshares and pruning hooks so that we can practice Jubilee. A moment internal to that is attending to our grief in coming to see what's there, like coming to see the situation for what it is. Along those lines, in that spirit, I will begin with a poem from Wendell Berry, and before we turn to it, a couple things to note. One is that Wendell Berry, when he's writing this poem, right, the opening line is, "Terrors are to come," and he's thinking of his children. It's important to acknowledge that for many, the terrors have been ongoing for a long time. Right. And then the other point that I've used this poem a number of times, and sometimes people think at the end he's saying, I wish your lives were never made to his children. He's saying, I can't wish your lives unmade. For all that I'm afraid of, I want you to be here. So the poem, so we close with Divorces, the poem from Galeano. Let's open with the poem from Wendell Berry. It's entitled, "To My Children, Fearing for Them." Terrors are to come. The earth is poisoned with narrow lives. I think of you. What you will live through or perish by eats at my heart. What have I done? I need better answers than there are. To the pain of coming to see what was done in blindness, loving what I cannot save. Nor, your eyes turning toward me, can I wish your lives unmade, though the pain of them is on me." So sit with that for a minute.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. This is a topic that is very, very painful, as Wendell Berry captures with his poetry here. And I appreciate you being here for such a painful topic. As I tell my students, my name is Paul. Again, I teach theology at Jesuit High School in Portland, Oregon. We wrestle with this quite a bit. As you can imagine, for high schoolers, this is a very, very pressing issue, as it is for all of us, of course, but they see it as very particular to them, and ask us questions like one of the Barry captures here, that, wow, we have no good answers for, and we have a lot of responsibility for. So, as Dan said, we are attending to political, ecological grief, as he described yesterday. This is an issue that captures so much. So when we're looking at the environment, it's not only all the ecological issues, but really you trace that to colonialism, which also results in racism, sexism, patriarchy, all stemming from imperialism. So many topics that cause such deep anguish and such deep grief. So we're looking at this from a lens of what is a Christian response? Okay. These first few slides are based on Joanna Macy's work. She's a famous ecologist. Putting it straight simply, every generation until now, we've always assumed there will be generations to follow. It's just a natural assumption. Well, regardless of what your worldview is, regardless of your politics, your religion, non-religion, right, what your economic views are, regardless of your worldview, that certainty is now lost to us. Actually, before I get to emotional reactions to this, consider questions that come up with that certainty being lost. Again, Wendell Berry captures it very well. What's to become of my children that I love so deeply? What's to become of their children? And so the emotional reactions to this are natural, of course, and they include sheer terror. They include rage, anger. How did we let this happen? How did systems allow this to happen? How did we participate in systems that allow this to happen? Guilt. Do I benefit from this system? Do I benefit from others being oppressed by this system, being exploited by this system? Deep sorrow, deep anguish. I want to point something out here. If you notice, the title slide said political ecological grief. And purposefully, this one says political ecological despair. And I'm going to ask you to keep that in the back of your head. We'll come back to that. But there is a distinction we want to draw between the two. These feelings, terror, guilt, sorrow, rage, these aren't new feelings to us as a people. These are feelings that we've always encountered, especially when there's great trauma, great suffering, and then particularly when we're facing our own mortality. They're not new feelings. But what is new is that we are now feeling this as universal collective suffering. It's our entire planet. It's our entire species. Now, we have faced collective suffering throughout human history. There have been times, and we'll get to this later on today, there have been times where, in our faith tradition, people have felt cataclysmic suffering has come upon them, the end of the world. We now, with our current cosmology, our understanding of the ecosystem, the biosphere, the planetary system, we now know this is not just true to one nation. This is not just true to one region. This is true to all of us. That's heavy, and that's painful. It raises questions like, what happens to others? What happens to human life and non-human life? What happens to the entire planet? What happens to our heritage, our culture, our knowledge, our science, our philosophies, our religions? What happens to all of that? Does that disappear? These are painful, painful questions. Now, unfortunately, we are not wired to like pain. This came up yesterday, right? Somebody said, when I put my hand on the stove, I pull it back. We don't like pain, and that's great evolutionary-wise. That keeps us alive when we're facing an angry woolly mammoth, for example. there's not many of us who say, hey, let's go feel some pain today, right? It's not wired in us. And again, that's for our survival. But when we repress, this is not good when we're talking about our emotional pain, our emotional health, our psychological health, our spiritual health. When we run away from that pain, oh man. And so the repression strategies that we tend to use, and again, this is based on Macy's work, she says we tend to use disbelief, denial, and these sound similar, but she makes a distinction. Now that being said, there is crossover with all of these three. Disbelief, denial, and double life. So let's break these down for a minute. And as we go through them, I'm going to ask you to think about how it applies to you. Because we do all of these. So I got to ask myself, how do I do this? And collectively, how do we do this? How do we do this as a culture? So disbelief. Think about everything Dan brought up yesterday. A lot of us had a great reaction to that painting, the drawing that showed all of these different systems working together. Somebody made the comment, I knew all these things, but I didn't think of them as this interrelated relational system. It's overwhelming. It's so much to see. And that's a hard reality to grasp. A lot of these things are maddeningly abstract. Even if you believe, I believe that Arctic ice is melting. I believe that rationally. But isn't it abstract to us? Unless we're living in Barrow, Alaska or something? This is completely abstract to us in a day-to-day kind of life. I believe that there are microplastics all over our environment. They're in your body. I know this intellectually. But it's still abstract. Dan tied this to including the oppression of BIPOC people. And it is tied to this. Think about what white privilege is. Isn't white privilege, at least some of it, due to the disbelief? Because it's so hard to see it. It's so hard to see it if you are a beneficiary of white privilege. It's so abstract. And so it's hard to believe. Another layer to this is that the dangers that are more perceptible, it's gradual, a cruel, gradual change. There's the famous example of that really strange idea of the frog put in the water that gets warmed up. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And it just stays there. That's a really weird experiment. I don't know who came up with that. I don't even think it's true. I think it's just kind of an anecdotal kind of thing that people use. But it does capture this idea very well. This gradual cruel just makes it seem like normal. And so it makes it hard to believe. We move to disbelief. And so it's a normal part of life. If you know the artist R. Crumb, he captures this gradual change where things just seem normal and yet you have this enormous change going on. This image here, I'm going to ask you to take a moment to look at this, process it, and really look at each panel. And when you're ready, why don't you go ahead and talk with a person or two around you. What is your reaction to this? What are your observations, your reaction? What are your thoughts?
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody who would like to share any of your thoughts, observations, comments with the larger group?
Well, there's an enormous difference from the first to the last panel, but from any one panel to the next, it's pretty subtle. It doesn't look horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's just aggregate that is.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the genius of how he captures it, I think. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you pick any two, there's not much difference there. Yeah.
Panel 7, 8, 9, and 10 all have an electric cable car system, which is cleaner than cars.
Mm-hmm.
And as Texaco comes in, that cable car system has gone away and has been replaced only with cars.
Yeah. Great observation. Absolutely. Yep. There's an interesting history behind that also when you look at rail cars in America and how that was pretty purposefully moved away from. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
The sky is darker. This is what my husband said anyway. From the upper left to the lower right.
I've never had anybody point that out. I love that.
Good job, Larry.
Well done, Larry.
Well, yeah. It almost looks like night.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, interesting. Thank you. Yeah.
I find it interesting that it's from 1979.
Yes. Yes. And yet, how relevant it's now.
Yeah.
Now, he did do a addition to this, I believe, in the 90s. And he adds three more panels. And they are like possibilities. And one is just devastation, destruction, we are gone. One is the science will save us view, and the other is what he calls ecotopia, right? I would encourage you to look that one up, it's pretty interesting. It's not relevant to where we're at today, it's where we're going, so. But yeah, it's an excellent depiction.
Just another observation based on some previous conversations about differences in age or whatever. I may have entered it in, let's say, number 6. And another generation may have entered the world in number 11, and that's how they perceive what the world is. I perceive it and have experienced it there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that does impact then how we look forward. Mm-hmm. And but if you've never seen one, you're only in a picture, you've never had an actual interaction.
Beautifully stated. Thank you. Yeah, so, and in fact, we get that whole generational divide, right? Well, back in my day, we're just pick it, right? And then the young people are like, what are you talking about? Crazy people, right? Yeah. Did I cut you? Were you saying something else?
No, I mean, sort of like, oh, I wish it was.
Right.
That beautiful and pristine. Yes. And yet, guess what happened along the way?
Yeah.
We were part of that.
Thank you. I don't know whose hand was up next. I'm sorry. I'll bounce over here.
It struck me immediately. This is the story of the neighborhood I grew up in.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. And I entered probably somewhere between 7 and 9 there. And there had been a streetcar. It had already been torn out.
Mm.
But, and it's very much like, who's to say what the next step? Is it going to further decay? Is it going to recover?
Yeah, where are we going? I love how you can have a personal connection with this. I believe your hand was up. Oh, your hand.
I am interested to watch. I love details. The power line. There were none there, and I would love to see the next row at the bottom that isn't there, and there would be no power lines. It'd be underground.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, watch. It's one little pole, and then it's two, and then it's everyone.
More and more and more. Yeah, great observation. I believe you.
We were talking back here, I don't know your name, but about how a lot of this is stuff we need as humans. So it's not as simple as the first panel's good, the last panel's bad. A lot of things, decisions that have been made have been bad. But But in order for humans to have everything they need in that space, you need some version of this.
Can I throw a curveball at you?
Yeah.
Were there any humans in this space?
Yes, but probably not as densely, I'm guessing.
But something to consider, though, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And I hear you. I hear what you're saying, but just another layer to consider with it.
Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah, so picking up on that point, I think what... Looking at it this time, so it reveals a lot, right? But I think one of the things it does conceal to the average white person who's looking at this thinking about nature is it conceals, it perpetuates this idea
yes.
that well, this place was empty until white mm-hmm. settlers came in, yeah. right? And so if you take that as an observation to start to look at this, you have to realize that there's a whole, any number of histories of violence and terror that are being concealed throughout this, as we're thinking about the way in which technology has developed and industrial societies mm-hmm. have developed. So this does really good job of capturing kind of the violence that has been posed on nature. It's also concealing other
yes.
elements that are worth
yes.
acknowledging.
Yes.
It seems fundamentally though to be about density, isn't it? I mean, if you were at one person per square kilometer or
you could certainly look at it that way, though what I've read on a analysis of this is really it's that second panel that is the change. And when you read any history of the American railroad system, that's it. That's really it. And again, like Dan said, there's nations and nations that are hidden in this panel. Nations. Right? So that's a really important point here. I believe there's another hand up. Was your hand up back there? No?
Well, we
okay, yeah. And did I miss anybody on the top? So we'll just shut it up there. Okay.
Just,
yes?
One simple observation that the only like trees in the five pen are poles, you know?
Yes. yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly, yes. Used for consumption,
yeah.
like Dan was talking about yesterday, right? Another thing that's been pointed out is the original home that is built,
mm-hmm.
you know, it becomes a kind of historic general store. It eventually disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's eventually gone. There's a lot going on in here.
Well,
yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you, if we're looking at this in a different context, let's say somebody who wanted to promote progress, you would say, oh, this is progress. This is peaceful progress. But to your point, there's all kinds of violence
yes.
going on behind this. And so it's not just peaceful progress, it's violence
yes.
is going on. So,
Yes, and that word progress gets used in this context, again, to hide the violence
uh-huh.
that is really occurring.
Uh-huh.
That was captured perfectly in the quote by Larry Summers that Dan shared
yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? This is progress.
Mm-hmm.
Let's send all of our waste materials somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
This has everything to do with what we decide is most important. What do we, like, if you say the most important thing is this progress thing, then sure, this is reasonable. But what do humans actually value? I mean, we go off to parks and things like that. We try to get away from what we need. So
that's interesting. Great point. Yeah, the Lakota Sioux have a name for white people. And it's Washichu. And it means those who always take the best meat. You want to talk about a critique. You want to talk about, just through that one word, identifying the violence, generations of violence that continues to this day. Yeah. Yeah, somebody brought up the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline yesterday. It continues. Okay? Yes?
I was thinking that we could and we should do panels like this about Holden Village and the Railroad Creek Valley because it's not just about Keystone or a city.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what we are in one of these panels
yes.
right now. And if this is a moral, ethical, and
mm-hmm.
Strategic challenge for Holden Village to consider how are we part of the future of this valley in a way that mitigates some of that violence that didn't just finish with the remediation, but the ongoing harmony and balance of being in this valley.
Thank you, Stacy. Yes, absolutely, yes. I love how in the Holden description it recognizes it's easy to condemn mining. That's easy for us to do from where we're sitting. Oh, they mined in this valley. Oh, those bad people. Of course, we're beneficiaries of the mining. In the Holden description, it says, we recognize we would not be here had it not been because of that mining. Right? So like Stacy's saying, what do we do with this? What do we do with this? Okay, I'm going to move on here. Thank you for your thoughts. Okay, denial. This is where we take refuge in rejection. You've probably heard a lot of these, right? Things like climate change is a hoax. When I would teach about ecological justice, eco-theology, climate change, anthropogenic climate disruption, I would have to spend a lot of time trying to convince at least 50% of my students that climate change is a reality. Mm-hmm. Here's these charts, here's these charts, kind of like what Dan showed us yesterday, those charts, right? Just think back to the Bush era. Think how it was, no, climate change is not. So George W. Bush, right? It was this whole political, no, it's not happening, it's not happening, it's a hoax. Everything will be fine. You hear this one a lot now. Scientists are wrong all the time. And it's interesting because we've lost respect for research, for people who are experts in fields. Now we'd rather listen to a blog that we like. What I love is the cognitive dissonance from this one to the next one. Scientists are wrong all the time. Science will save us. Now, I would bet a lot of us in here don't believe climate change is a hoax. We probably like to think everything will be fine, but maybe we don't. But we probably find ourselves in that denial sometimes. So it's like, so again, it's not as simple as what is your worldview or whatnot. We probably believe this to some degree. What is the science behind this, right? So things to consider. Now, here's one that probably hits us all: popular conceptions of sustainability. We use that word far too lightly. And it's a, please understand, I'm not saying we should not pursue sustainability. We should. But we use it in ways for things that are not sustainable. If everybody had a Tesla. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. How did you extract? Let's just go with the batteries. How did you extract the chemicals necessary for those batteries, right? Dan showed us those charts. He showed us that graphic image with all the connections. And that relational interplay of all these crises is something that is so hard to accept. So again, that we go into that denial, right? How do all these things connect to each other? It's hard for us to really grasp that, especially because we are a culture that is, Macy's calls it, we says we are untutored in the perception of relationships. We stress the individual so much, like Dan was saying, I am the God. It's about me. And we forget about the we. And that's really what it is about. It's about the we. Thoreau has a great quote I love. City life. Millions of people being lonely together. Mother Teresa has one that's in that same vein, and she says something, I don't know it verbatim, but it's something to the effect of, we have very bad poverty in Calcutta, but the poverty of the West is worse, and the poverty of the West is loneliness. So, denial. Here's an image capturing that. This is titled Whistling Past His Graveyard. All right, and the third one, Double Life. I know I'm guilty of this. And we have to be honest with ourselves with all of this. We tend to live our lives as if nothing has changed while knowing that everything has changed. Please raise your hand if you're willing to do so if you've ordered anything from Amazon before coming up to Holden. Right? One of the things I love to stress to my students in my peace and justice class is it is so easy, kind of like the mine statement that Stacy brought up. It's easy to point our fingers at the systems. It's easy to point our fingers at the corporations. It's easy to do that. But we've got to take a lesson from the prophets and point the finger here for there to be any change. And sure, we have to call out systemic injustices. Absolutely. We absolutely do. But we have to realize that it's here as well. Basically, in our lives, same old, same old. This political cartoon here captures it pretty well. Take a moment to read that one. It's sad how funny it is, right? And most people laugh at it. I laughed at it too the first time I read it. You know, they say the best comedy is truth, right? And, you know, my I teach high school students. When these are like, oh, heck yeah, right? I mean, that shouldn't be funny. But it is, yeah.
It's funny, but it's also instructive in that we'll do the right thing if we have the right incentive.
Yes, absolutely. So we'll get to that today and more so in the next sessions. How do we do that return, right? And the grieving process is absolutely necessary. We have not grieved enough, and that's why this is true. We have not grieved the loss of fauna, the loss, you know, of human life, the loss of our biosphere. We have not faced it enough to grieve it enough to make that turn. Same old, same old. Okay. So denial, disbelief, double life. And again, we're guilty of all of these as individuals and as a people. And so I ask you to keep in the back of your head grief versus despair. Grief versus despair, right? So despair paralyzes us through hopelessness. And we are going to feel despair, don't get me wrong. But despair is not a place that we want to stay. And when I say that, I'm basing this on our Judeo-Christian tradition. But you can also approach it from a psychological perspective. Whatever works for you. Yes, we can feel despair. We should name it. But we don't want to stay in that hopelessness. Viktor Frankl, I know a lot of you are probably familiar with him, defines despair as suffering without meaning. Now, those of you who don't know Viktor Frankl, he's a Shoah survivor. So Shoah, the Holocaust. He lost, I can't remember if it was all of his family. He definitely lost his parents. I think maybe he had one sister who survived, if I remember correctly. So you want to talk about somebody who experienced the depths of human suffering. Suffering without meaning is what he calls despair. Whereas grief is a necessary and healthy response to trauma. So, my question for you, why should we embrace grief? Why should we not do what our instincts say and run away from it? Why should we embrace it? Go ahead and take some time to think about that and discuss with one another. Okay, my friends, we are having a wonderful sharing here. I do need to keep us moving because of time. So if I can just ask you to just, if you can just give me a bullet point. Why embrace grief? Just shout it out. What's a bullet point? Reason why?
Healing. Get to the other side. Healing.
Acceptance.
Reset stress in our body.
Okay. Wonderful. Consider Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Right. You have to go through the stages of grief. If you repress them, it's going to come back later on in much more horrible and dysfunctional ways. And again, we all do it. I do this. We all do it. Right? We have to confront it. We have to voice it, name it, share it. We have to get it out of us to actually heal. And dang, that's scary. It's easier said than done. No question about it. But it's only, you all know this. You said it, right? It's only through confronting trauma that we can heal. Here's two things to keep in mind. These feelings of pain, anguish, terror, rage, suffering for our world, they're natural and healthy. They mean that we care. That's what they mean. So let's not run away from it. Looking at the Lamentations of the Psalmist. First of all, over one-third of the Psalms are lamentations. Suffering, deep suffering. I forgot the psalm where it says, I go to bed and my pillow is wet from the crying. Right, which psalm is that? Anybody know? That's okay. Right. But there's so many lamentation psalms. Now look at this one. Lord, hear my prayer. Listen to my plea. Don't turn away from me in this time of my distress. Bend down your ear and give me speedy answers, for my days disappear like smoke. My health is broken. My heart is sick. It is trampled like grass and is withered. My food is tasteless. I've lost my appetite. I'm reduced to skin and bones because of all my groaning and despair. You want to talk about relevant for now? I encourage you to do two things with these psalms. Number one, yes, pray personally, but also communally. Lord, hear our prayer. Listen to our plea. Don't turn away from us in this time of our distress. Bend your ear to us. Give us speedy answers. Our days are disappearing like smoke. Our health is broken. Our hearts are sick. The second thing I would encourage you to do, read it as though it is the groan of the earth itself. As though the earth is speaking this to its creator. Heal me. We get a lot of very clear, straight ones like this. O Lord, from the depths of despair, I cry for your help. Hear me, answer, help me. Biblical scholars have noted that almost all of the Lamentation Psalms end with praise. But, as you all noted, you can't get to that praise and hope. You can't have praise without that hope. You can't do it until you let it all out. I remember hearing Walter Brueggemann speak about this, and he laid it out. He was like, some of these psalms, like, God, how dare you? How dare you let this happen to you? Where are you? Ooh. And he yelled it like that. We're so uncomfortable with that, aren't we? But isn't that how we feel? We need to express it. Obviously, it needs to be in safe places, right? But we need to express it. And then we can get to that praise and to that hope. The prophets grieve, they lament, and they groan. They do more than this, which, you know, we recognize the power of the prophets. Think about modern-day prophets. The MLKs, right? The Dorothy Days, the Sojourner Truths, the Gandhis. Yes, they did these great, powerful things, but not until they grieve, lament, and groan, and go through the belly of the whale. Go through the darkness and the pain of the suffering that they are speaking out against. The dark night of the soul, right? They can't just get to, you know, name the prophet, right? They can't get to the liberation of India without going through the belly of the whale. And it's not that they are excited about it. None of us are. But they're willing to do it. So talk about a great example. Actually, let me just say this. Oops. I'm back. There's no jubilee without the grief. There's no renewal without the belly of the whale. Now, this is Jeremiah. I have seen the earth, and here it is wildness and waste, and I look to the heavens, and their light is gone. I have seen the mountains, and here they are wavering, and all the hills palpitate. I have seen, and here there is no human being, and all the birds of the heavens have fled. I have seen, and here the garden land is now a wasteland, and all its cities are pulled down. Again, talk about applying today. He's writing about Babylonian destruction of Judah. And this was a cataclysmic event. Walter Brueggemann talks about this as this is the end of the world for Jeremiah and for the Jewish people. Another interesting thing about this, as Dan talked about Cain versus Abel being of the spear versus being a cultivator, this is purposely talking about destruction of the garden. The entire book of Lamentations is about wailing of this loss, of this cataclysm. And then we have Jesus' grief. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took with him Peter and James and John and began to be distressed and agitated. And he said to them, "I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and keep awake." And going a little farther, he threw himself on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. You don't get resurrection without Gethsemane. You don't get resurrection without the cross. The deep, deep grieving. On the cross, Jesus quotes Psalm 22. My God, why have you abandoned me? And it's a scream of despair. This image Dan shared with me. It's titled Gethsemane, is it not? Yeah. And so this is Gethsemane of our current planetary emergency. So this is Jesus in Gethsemane mourning the loss, the destruction of the earth. Take a moment to contemplate this image. And I encourage you to go ahead and discuss with a person or two around you if you feel comfortable doing so, what this image speaks to you, how it speaks to perhaps your grief. Okay. So again, is there anything anybody would like to share with the larger group in your response to this or your reflection on this?
That's the tree that was cut down to create the cross.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Can't give you an answer to that, but that's beautiful.
Sorry that they cut the tree down.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great thought.
I take this as a picture of Jesus grieving over the destruction of the earth. But then we think about all the progress of the what we've done on the earth, actually from Jesus' day right to today, building houses, that type of thing. I'm just getting mixed feelings. Where does it end? Where does it start?
It's a great question. It's a great question. It requires us looking at this more deeply, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
I don't know where to begin.
It's very overwhelming. I agree. Yeah. And so how do you get to true sustainability with true human justice, ecological justice, and keep going, right? And it's overwhelming. It's a lot. We'll get to more of that in the next sessions. That's a great question. Was your hand up also? Yeah.
I think of the road between Lake Chelan and Holden Village, all the dead trees, the trees that have been cut, that image is very powerful. Mm. About things that we have little or no control over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Looking at this makes me very, very sad because it's how I feel inside. But it also, I see hope in it, in the fact that Jesus is actually holding on.
Mm-hmm.
He's with us, walking through this mess we've created. Mm-hmm. He's with us. And hopefully we can figure it out with his help.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. The word compassion comes up for me, right? Mm-hmm. And so the etymology on that, suffering with, mm-hmm. right? And this came up earlier. We need, that's how we need to feel to really start doing the work. Because, like you said, this is some heavy, complicated. There's not one easy answer. And I think as a culture, Americans, we don't like to see bad things. We value sunny optimism. What's wrong with you if you're not happy? That's kind of our cultural value, and so it makes you even more not want to share your grief. But that's dysfunction, right? We have to care enough to this level before we can say, let's fix it. And now the other problem is, as Americans, all right, let's fix it. What's the answer? Give me the answer. Oh, there's not an easy answer? There's not a no, that's long, it's long commitment. Order this on Amazon, click. Right?
The person who was responsible for making the decision to cut that tree down probably didn't even know the tree existed and never saw the tree up or gone.
Mm.
It's kind of, if you can't feel it, you can't have compassion for it.
Well said, well said, thank you. Yeah.
I'm curious about the painting on the face and the fingers. Some artists might have some suggestions.
As far as this part goes?
Right, and then on his face?
I believe it's showing I mean, my take on it is it's showing the anguish and the, you know, suffering on the body also. Right? But again, that's open to interpretation.
I also noticed that it looks like he has a hooded sweatshirt on and sweatpants.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, so it's a modernized version. It's Gethsemane today. And Gethsemane of the earth, right? The earth is the cross. Yeah. Yes, Rachel.
It makes me think of the book I grew up, The Giving Tree, by and this relationship the person has with the tree and loves the tree, and the tree shelters and provides and nourishes. And when he has a kid, then he talks down the tree and he says the tree has given to him. He loved the tree, and still yet with that consumerist ideal, the tree just gives and gives, and still he loved it, right? But intent doesn't always mean impact, and so how he had harmed the tree and assumed it was always given because of his own personal want.
Thank you, Rachel. Isn't that the worst book ever?
Yes.
I mean, people hold that book up as like, this is love. No. No. Stacey?
I was thinking about the line in that in the biblical accounts of Gethsemane where Jesus is saying, take this cup from me, I don't want it. And so I was thinking of the tree in another metaphorical way. Like we have this painting by Christian Gilia of the tree of life in Revelation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That in fact this is him, right? This is what we've done to the Holy Divine, to God, and that it is a relationship right there. This is his cup.
Yeah.
This is the tree of life that we are desecrating.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you.
I think sometimes, too, we focus on outside of grief and forget that it has its own genius. Mm-hmm. You know, like, here he's drawing a spiral on a stump. But really, a stump is like where a tear or a raindrop falls into a pond. They kind of growth rings out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a pond and a stump with a lot of light in that particular situation. But there's this way in which grief, it says that nature really is a grief pressured system that it teaches grief, and it purges and puts it. Lifts all this water every year, and this piston drops down. It has this tremendous volume, and it's not just the compost inside of a loss or anything, but actually the growth itself is grief pressure.
Yeah.
The seed bursts, the leaves are pushed out, and goes on and on.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so we have some homework for you. Before we do that, before I forget this, many of you have already done this, but just a reminder, if you want, we make all of the materials that are being presented are going to be available to you if you would like them in PDF form, so you can put your information on here, and Holden will send you the information. Okay.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everyone, again, for being here. We are going to give you a homework assignment, should you choose. We'll give it to you. You feel free to take it up. But we have some paper here, and we invite you at some point today, if you can make the space for it and the time for it, to reflect on your own grief, to cultivate, to name what you're grieving, to try and express it through writing a poem, through writing your own psalm of lament, through simply just naming the different things that are going on, in maybe in reference to the Gethsemane painting we just looked at, in reference to what we were talking about yesterday, take some time to reflect and work on really kind of what is it I need to name that I'm carrying that I would rather repress, deny, push down. And we won't share that as a group, right? But it would be... My experience is that type of thing is helpful to share with someone I trust. So if you feel able to do that, maybe find some time for that as well. So really work to kind of put in practice what we've been naming today as far as an essential moment in confronting the planetary emergency and working to live out Isaiah's vision of peace and salvation and of Jubilee is to name the sadness, to name the grief. And continue to acknowledge that as we move through. Yes,
Ruth. A perfect place to work on that this afternoon. Join me next door in Creekside for laundry and printer. We've got paints, we've got collage paper, we've got watercolor, we've got crayons, we've got markers, whatever, and a safe space to explore in.
Thank you so much. I actually wanted to find you this morning to ask if that would be okay to. I didn't want to like impinge.
Yeah, Dan and I were like, did you ask Ruth yet? I didn't ask Ruth. Oh no, yeah.
So, artistically expressing it in the space that Ruth has made for us would be a wholly appropriate thing. Tomorrow, so we'll let you go right now. The paper's there. Tomorrow we will continue this process by Paul. If you can go back to the image. So the Gethsemane painting is tying, and the artist does this consistently with his work, Michael Cook, tying Jesus to garden imagery. And so tomorrow we'll begin to think more explicitly about Christian discipleship, bringing the story of Jesus together with actually Genesis 2 through 4 and the garden imagery there. How Jesus relates to Cain or doesn't relate to Cain, and the practice of Jubilee. So we'll tie quite a bit of this together, and the last 20 minutes of our session will actually go through a guided meditation of giving your heart and your will and your desire over to Christ and away from this is Ignatian, so away from Satan or the affects of Cain, the desires of Cain. So that's where we'll go tomorrow, and we'll build off that on Friday. Thank you all.
There's also paper available here if you'd like to get started, even with just like stream of consciousness thoughts on expressing your grief. Again, I do encourage you to go to the art studio also if you want to get more in depth with paintings and whatnot. But these supplies are here for you. Okay, so thank you very much. Really appreciate your willingness to journey together. Thank you.